coming up on this week's Redcast.
It's real. I mean, it is here and will have some major consequences.
You have to be able to support this in the same way as your own financial information. And that is a really big shift for corporates.
Doing nothing is not really an option, whether there's a regulatory penalty or whether actually there's a business penalty because your competitors provide this information and you don't.
It's not just knowing your existing data flows, but also knowing the gaps with this new regulation.
Welcome to Redcast. I'm PJ DiGiammarino, CEO and founder of JWG. And I'm really pleased to be bringing you episode 3 of season 4 on ESG reporting. Now, last episode, we had a bit of a deep dive. Kevin gave us a great perspective of what good green data looks like. Since then, we've had a chance to kind of expand upon that and publish some research. So we have a lot out there now. We're beginning to get into what is ESG RegTech really mean. But we thought, who would be better to help explain some of the details of this incredibly complex topic simply than a seasoned veteran reporter who has an interest in all things regulation and has actually been to COP and I think since recovered, an accounting data guru that's sitting in the middle of all of the detailed standards conversations, and a former investment banker who's a data lineage virtuoso. So, Lindsay, can you please introduce yourself?
Yes. Hi, I'm Lindsay Rogerson. I'm a journalist at Thomson Reuters Regulatory Intelligence. I'm a financial regulation. That's my beat. So all things financial regulation. And how I come to the whole space of sustainability reporting is because obviously in Europe, legislators chose to start with the financial firms, and then they've pushed out those rules now to corporates and CSRD. So that's my interest in this.
Thank you, Mr. Turner.
Hey, everybody, I'm John Turner. I run XBRL International. We're the Global Standards Development Organization, a not-for-profit that works with regulators and standard setters right around the world to define what they want from market participants. Of course, we try to influence that as best we can to ensure that it both at a technical level and to a lesser extent at a content level, that information is as aligned as possible. That has been an interesting journey over the past sort of decade in particular, where huge numbers of companies right around the world are reporting in a digital way using the XBRL standard for financial information. We're now at the brink of a new wave of sustainability disclosures, and this is a great opportunity for people to be thinking about the digital aspects of that, the digital lineage, and the quality of that information from the get-go.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm John Tobin here. I'm a data architect at Solidatus, and Solidatus is a specialist in data lineage and understanding the data flows that you need for things like regulatory requirements. CSRD's got a whole lot of extra scope, and it affects a whole lot more companies. And Solidatus helps you understand the data that you need to report and where that data is coming from, and plan out your data sourcing program. And on the back of that, you're going to understand your data flows through your company and be able to take advantage of that for all sorts of other things, not just ESG regulatory reporting.
Thanks, John. And I think I'd like to introduce a bit of my personal journey with regulatory reporting here as well, because for me, it all started in 2005 when I was faced with MiFID I, and the concept of making the markets transparent was relatively new, and a whole bunch of very difficult to make practical rules were being put on the industry. And I've always argued for reporting, it needs to become digitized. So I've been leading an effort for digitizing regulatory reporting across a whole bunch of different spaces. Laterally, we've been doing that in the derivative space. So we spent a long time with the trade associations helping to get a method to be able to understand what the information is that regulators are looking for and make it easier for people to comply. That's led us into open source. And there's been a whole discussion with the financial open source community around how do we get standard artifacts out there that people can use to produce and then validate their information. And as part of that, we then ran a hackathon last year that John Tobin was involved in. And we've really been pushing the boundaries of, well, how can we apply some of these new tools to ESG reporting for this CSRD? And I think what the research we just published in advance of our 7th of February conference really highlighted a few things about this data. You know, first of all, it's not just this data that regulators are worried about. There's an overall disappointment with data management in the community. And there's been a whole bunch of new pushes from the BCBS community in particular that's looking for better lineage back to text, a better understanding of what it is that people think that they're reporting, and a better feel that the management is accountable for this information that's being shared. Now, when you start hitting the Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive, you then wind up in a big shift for the ESG community, because now it's no longer just people sitting in the CEO's office that can make statements. You really need to put controllers on the hook, much in the way that your financial reporting is done, which, you know, is very familiar to the accounting community. You really need to make sure these statements stand up. And I think that's the great thing about XBRL, but it's also the challenge that most people doing regulatory reporting will face, which is, okay, we weren't necessarily getting the greatest of results for the regulatory reports that we're currently doing. How do we now take that huge step up to where we're going to have complete transparency with an XBRL framework? And that's where open source becomes so much of an opportunity for the community, because it gives everyone that chance to have a collaborative way to approach that problem. So to me, this all means that, you know, regulators aren't waiting. You can't play this game of, I'll just catch up quickly when the fines hit. You really need to think proactively and be strategic about how you're investing your time in collaboration this year. So that's where we're coming from in advance of the conference. Mr. Tobin, from your perspective, what does the implementation of CSRD really mean?
Well, it really means a lot of extra things to report. And if you look at it, you've got things, the complexity is going to increase. The amount of data that you need to get, you're going to need some new data sources. So you've got this double materiality concept coming on. The scope 3 emissions stuff is going to be it's going to be mandatory, and you need to deal with data from different sources like suppliers and customers. So overall, it's quite a bit more complicated. But on the other hand, things like a standard reporting format are going to mean that in future, you're going to be able to reuse what you're doing a lot better than you can at the moment. So we see it as a having to implement a set of new data flows through the company with controls and transparency, and take those data flows from reporting requirements all the way back to the source of the data. And it's not just data, it's also policies and non-metrics that need to be reported. So it's not just pure numbers, it's also about the policies and the reasons and the strategy. So these all come together. And overall, we see it as a challenge where people will need to focus on doing it as efficiently as possible at lowest possible cost, but then take advantage of what they've got to have that transparency and understanding of where the data is coming from and who should be supplying it.
Yeah, and that's I think well said. It's about not just the data for the data's sake or the reporting's sake. It's so much more than that. I guess, John Turner, from your point of view, I mean, the regulators understand the complexity of what they're asking for, right? This isn't your normal, what do I put on my balance sheet type question. There's a lot more uncertainty. Tell us a bit about what this means from your point of view.
Well, I think that uncertainty point is really well made, PJ. This is a process, and it's going to take some time to bed down. I'm coming at this very much from the perspective of the corporates in terms of your question here. And for corporates, they're all having to put a huge effort into understanding a set of risks, a set of opportunities, and double materiality, a set of impacts. in a manner that the majority of companies haven't had a huge focus on. Obviously, there are many that have had a significant focus on this for some time, but perhaps not quite at the C-suite level, perhaps not in terms of what that means for the organization. And the process of developing the systems, the processes, and the controls, and the policy framework around that is, I think, the big effort this year for all of those entities that are going to be reporting for the first time their CSRD information within their corporate report. So it's financials and sustainability information in one thicker omnibus. And they've got one of the things that regulators have done is said, well, you've got an extra year before you have to do that in a digital form. So that information won't arrive in a digital form until 26. To a large extent, we're very much at peace with that. This is a question of embedding this stuff down and people getting to deal with what is really a pretty massive change. They have to treat it in their own way, but I think those that are treating this as a new set of information from a risk management perspective and understanding what opportunities do exist are going to be the ones to watch. And of course, market participants have to start to gear up in terms of how they can use this information, not just sort of embedding the corporate data into their information flows for their own regulatory reporting, but also in terms of the manner in which they're using that for analysis.
Yeah, and I think, again, you've highlighted what John was getting at, which is there's so much more you can do than produce a regulatory report. But take us back to that bit about the how this is expanding what you're doing from a financial reporting perspective today. And I picked up an interesting speech that Chairman Ross gave at the EFRAG conference last year, and she was she's the ESMA chair talking to the accountancy bodies, saying we now have achieved a holistic view across not just the company's information, but how they're thinking about their ESG footprint. And what does that transition actually mean this year?
Well, I think achieving that vision is what that is about, and it's going to take some time. The development and publication of ESG information, a lot of which has been voluntary. I know that for large corporates, they've been had some regulatory obligations in the past, but there hasn't been the same kinds of obligations to ensure that there's lineage and traceability around that information. You have to be able to support this in the same way as your own financial information. It moves from being a communications function to a disclosure function, which involves a lot of controls. It involves oversight from the top of the company as well as the audit committee. And that is a really big shift for corporates. And it involves, you know, changes to very much in-demand people, the folk that understand this ESG information. A lot of them are sort of finding that they're suddenly coming under the CFO instead of where they might have been previously. So there's lots and lots of change in this. And I think one of the things we know about any really substantial shift of this nature is that it does take a while to bed down. The ESMA in Europe has been very clear about its expectations that nobody should be dawdling, that they have to take this exercise seriously, and they're very keen to achieve that vision that ESMA has articulated in a few discussions and a few speeches.
Yeah, amen to that. And I guess Lindsay, let's bring this into the larger policy debate, because this is a global conversation and we're talking about Europe. Help us understand and frame the consequences from putting something like this in.
Yeah, absolutely. So your point about a global conversation is really well made, PJ. I think, yes, obviously here we're talking about a specific piece of European legislation, but when boards are... and executive teams are thinking about how they implement and what they put in place for reporting on CSRD, they cannot be thinking about that in a vacuum. There are other pieces of European legislation. So the Due Diligence Directive just got passed. We've got legislation on deforestation and various other things that make sense to incorporate when you're making these multi-year decisions and multi-year spending decisions to make it easier for yourself down the road. You also have to think about CSRD is extraterritorial. So there will be big non-European companies, non-European companies with big European presence, which are also caught by this. Right. Those same companies have probably just also working through, if they have a presence in a large presence in California, will be working through what the Californian climate directive, it's not how the US phrase their legislation, but that piece there, so what is the overlap? Equally, how does this all fit in with global reporting standards such as the International Sustainability Standards Board? I mean, we've heard from both European and other regulators around the world that they there should be compliance with this. And I will be intrigued to hear from John Turner about, how much I keep being told that down in the bolts, once you've got this using XBRL, once you've got this data point in CSRD or SFRD, you can pull that out and it can go into your reporting in California or if the SEC, if we ever see those regulations there. There's a lot that firms have to take on board. So yes, this is one piece of legislation, but it has to be said in the context of, certainly in terms of your planning and budgeting and just actually making it all manageable for your people. It has to be set in the context of, what crossover there will be with these other pieces of legislation and other jurisdictions that you might operate in. And it all has to start with this kind of data mapping. So I'm interested to hear what John Tobin has to say about that finding your data in the first place, because people aren't starting from nowhere. Most firms, large firms who are caught by CSRD in the first instance will have been reporting voluntarily to CDP for years. I think it's like 120,000 firms that produce that data set. TCFD as well, we're not starting from nowhere. And I think it's important to use what you've got and go from there. And so I'll stop there.
Yeah, but Lindsay, let's before we go to those important questions, help us understand the framework for consequences here. Because I think that's an important piece. So with all the, if I'm sitting there trying to decide, do I put money and resource into this? I need to understand what happens if I don't. So what's the framework, especially from the banking community's point of view? Because ultimately, they have a new role here as a bit of a data cop to some extent.
They do, and they are not acting sort of unpoliced either, because this data will, so CSRD comes after the Financial Sustainability Reporting Directive, which hit investment firms. So a lot of European or firms anywhere actually that have European investors will probably have had to start, probably already have been reporting some of this data already, because their owners needed the information to fulfill their regulatory requirements. Where, with things like the Due Diligence Directive and some of the, the deforestation and the hydrogen, there's various different things like coming around. So that will all have to feed into the banks who have to do climate stress testing and stranded assets, they're being asked by their own regulator to look at that. So the it's not a question of we can sit back and do nothing, because that's not actually a viable solution, because you will need this data by your lender. You'll be asked for this data by your lenders, your investors. So doing nothing is not really an option. Whether there's a regulatory penalty or whether actually there's a business penalty because your competitors provide this information and you don't, and so that's I think that's an important point to underscore.
Yeah, so in order to get the mandates to be able to get the investment, you need to be able to prove some metrics and point to your transition plans and those kind of things. It all now needs to be signed off.
Yeah, and just one final thing on that. So CSRD might be new, but ESMA has already, it does yearly, so the last few years, it does an annual review of corporate documents, so annual reports and other market facing communications. And it has been looking at sort of so-called in the greenwashing category there for the last few years. And again, it's said this year it expects national regulators across Europe to be tougher on not so much, I don't think it's necessarily intentional greenwashing, but that kind of where you say something and they, if you look this up and there would be, those reports are there, you should go and look them up. That kind of, we've said something in lovely words in our annual report, but when the regulator's gone to look at the data to support that, it's not there. And that is greenwashing. And the regulator actually doesn't really care whether it's intentional or unintentional. So this whole data gathering exercise and data reporting exercise will feed into those things, and hopefully we'll see an end of that kind of loose language, shall we say.
But I think it's really important to recognize that for corporates is a lift. And you talk to CFOs and controllers who are very used to all of that, justify your workings. It's like a maths exam, right? In the financial space. And now that they're having to incorporate a range of sustainability information for some of them, this is just essentially creating a huge hit list of areas where we need new policies, new controls, and new ways of reinforcing that information. I completely agree with what you say, Lindsay. The regulators are taking this extremely seriously. You do need to be able to back up what you're saying. But I don't think anybody expects that any of that information is going to be perfect in day one. We're a long way away from that at day zero, if you like.
But back back to John Turner for a second. Tell us more about the iterative nature of this. And obviously there's one schema, but many different perspectives on what's in it across the different jurisdictions.
Oh, no, it's much more complicated than that, PJ. There are multiple schemas. Step back. It's worth starting from a very large perspective, which is, sustainability as a disclosure function is, in the scheme of things, a very new approach. And we've got, hundreds of years of financial information that we're kind of familiar with. We know the way that's supposed to work, and the requirements are sort of well defined and well embedded. Nobody should expect that's going to be the case in this sustainability area. The feedback loop that investors and market participants provide is going to be very important. Hey, this information is not useful. Let's find some more useful information. These rules are going to change. So I think that's one thing that people need to bear in mind, and they need to think in an agile fashion. But more specifically, and looking at the complexity of differences across the world, we have a conceptual baseline in the form of the ISSB framework, but actually we have sister standards efforts from EFRAG, ISSB, and the SEC. We can expect that the rest of the world will be either using ISSB or not deviating from it very much. So I think that's a second order issue. The question really is, if we do end up in the next few weeks with a US climate directive, or as SB 253 in California and similar legislation in multiple other states go into effect, impacting thousands of corporates across the US. Wait a minute, those entities, most of them not till 28 or 29, also have to report under CSRD. Can they reuse that information? What we really need are the policymakers, the standard setters themselves, to agree those mappings. Yes, it's possible to map these frameworks. But our interest is actually ensuring that the policymakers are doing that themselves, which over time, as you refactor stuff, will end up, I'm sure, with a much more consistent framework, a single schema, if you think about it in those terms, PJ. But that's a long way away. For the moment, we have multiple sister frameworks. We're going to have multiple XBRL taxonomies. Those are best thought of as ontologies, if you're a semantic technologist. And that process requires connecting those things up. Anybody can do that. And lots of people are offering to do so, but they will all come up with slightly different answers. So that's why we're working to try to ensure that the policymakers themselves are doing that as a really good starting point for John Tobin and his colleagues to be able to start that process off and really provide very robust and consistent information as we end up in a very complex new regulatory world.
Yeah, I think from my experience, companies really want to do a good job with reporting, but there's several obstacles. If you look at just the European ESG taxonomy, which is an effort to try and standardize the reporting information, there's over 500 items on that to report. And you've got SFDR, and then CSFD is like a building on top of that, but it's different. So there's constant change going on and a lot of complexity. And I think that efforts to standardize both the reporting, but also data sourcing, and is being driven by banks because they have to do it from a regulatory point of view, but that's pushing down to all sorts of participants in the industry. So they need information from upstream and downstream to be able to complete these reports. So the direction that you're getting the information from is changing. It's not just your own internal information, it's getting information from many other participants. And just managing this whole data flows is complicated, but it needs to be done. And as you say, things are changing, so you need to be able to reuse what you've got and use it as a basis maybe for figuring out what the differences are for the new ones, so you can add them in instead of having to redo the whole thing all over again.
But just to add on to that, I think that point about the connections between CSRD and SFDR are very important. Ratings in the ESG space have taken a hammering from the regulators over the last couple of years, and we see the voluntary code and other efforts of that nature to try to ensure that that information is improved. But there is more and more demand, not just from the regulators, but from market participants for high-quality information in this space. And one of the things that requires is this traceability. For example, from the SFDR framework and any Article 8 disclosures that you might be doing in terms of the European taxonomy, which, just to confuse things, is also called a taxonomy, even though it's really just a relatively short list with some indents. That process is going to be helped in due course by the digital nature of these obligations under CSRD. So the corporates that today produce their financials in Europe in inline XBRL are going to have to provide their sustainability disclosures under the corporate sustainability reporting directive, the CSRD framework. They're going to have to provide that information in a digital way as well, and that gives end users an ultimate form of traceability, because you can trace back to the fact, whether that's a number or a piece of text in that document. And I'm sure that that's going to be the objective for many users of this information. That will help. It's a little way away. As I said, we don't expect that information to be broadly available until 26, although we are hearing from lots of corporates that are very interested in trying this out early. So we'll see what happens as 2024 moves forward.
And when are we expecting to see the framework from the regulators?
The ISSB, so in terms of XBRL taxonomies that drive these corporate reports, the ISSB taxonomy is out there in draft, has been commented on, and they will be releasing a final version of that, or at least the first version of that, that can be utilized in the middle of the year. The timing for the ESEF framework, sorry, the there are too many acronyms in this space, the EFRAG framework, ESRS, is baked. It was approved in a board meeting 2 weeks ago, and I believe will be released towards the end of January or very early February. So that information will be, that framework will be available and can be utilized from then. It will still be in draft and it'll be out for consultation. And I guess that's one key message I have for everybody here. Please have a look at that information. If there is stuff that doesn't work in that context for you, make sure you pipe up with responses to that consultation. It'll be a very important one.
Well, speaking of final messages, we got to start thinking about wrap. I mean, there's a certain amount of validation amongst the herd of where this is going, because it is moving fast. I've not seen a regulatory report implementation at this scale, at this speed, ever. You know, people are having to make decisions this year about what data they're collecting to be able to put into reports that get produced next year. And there's not a lot of certainty. And we're just getting the technical framework. So it's actually perfect timing from that perspective, but come see what the herd has to say. John Turner, what's your message to those on the fence?
Oh, I like the peer point. The herd point. I think exploring what your peers are doing or planning to do with data is always informative and helpful. But I think that this kind of gathering is actually more important than just that. It actually provides you an opportunity to influence the direction of this effort. It helps you influence the speed and quality of the end data at some level. And to that point, the more that corporates get information back from end users, from market participants, they get that feedback loop, then the more they are confident about where they're investing and what they're doing. So I think that those things are both important. But I think this is also an opportunity to literally look at opportunities. This is a way of understanding, wait, this is something that I can do analytically that is a bit different, a bit smarter than I might have been doing in the past. How can that help me? So you've always got to think about it in terms of what's in it for me. And I suspect this gathering will be pretty helpful. So thanks for putting it together, PJ.
Well, my pleasure. John Tobin.
Yeah, I think this is a great strategic opportunity to and really understand what you need for ESG reporting and to implement all these changes in the most efficient way possible. And I think being able to talk to other people about how they're doing this and how they're approaching it and where they're getting their data from and how they're doing the data sourcing is going to be a really good opportunity to come up with a good plan and do it as efficiently as possible.
Yeah, and I think the capability you're bringing to the table is so critical. I mean, you really need to know your data flows, right? And you need to be able to start unpicking those now.
Exactly. It's not just knowing your existing data flows, but also knowing the gaps with this new regulation and where you might be wanting to get those data flows from to support it. And being able to just understand from a visual point of view, where all the data is coming from, it makes it a lot easier to manage the whole process.
Yeah, and I think that to me that all comes back to it. It's, you know, your voice matters now. You know, you really need to get to the table and say, right, for me in my business case internally, I need to be able to say I'm getting something from this collaboration. So it's helping to shape that the roadmap based on where the value really lies. You know, the unit of currency is meeting hours right now. You know, how much attention can you get from the community of experts, and they will have to be subject matter experts, to be able to come and weigh in on this data and to think through what these common artifacts need to look like and how do you make it safe for people to do that jointly? And that's to me the fascinating part about where we are with this agenda, because it's real. I mean, it is here and will have some major consequences. So thank you very, very much, Lady and Johns. to be for helping to spell this out for people. I thank you very much for your participation, and I will close the RegCast now. But just remind people that it's RegCast. The RegCast.co.uk will bring you to where you can get links to the materials, or it's the RegTechConference.co.uk that will help you find all of these materials that we'll link up there. But see you again soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. And if you've enjoyed the content, please like us so more people can join the conversation. Download all our episodes via all the major platforms. Come to the JWG website, which is jwg-it.eu, and follow our LinkedIn groups.